Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Welcome back. I hope everybody's having a great amusement time with all the distractions. It seems like there can be lulls sometimes, but it just seems like lately we've just had an overabundance of, I'll just call them distractions. I'll get into more of that later, but reclaimingtherepublic.org is also a sponsor of this show, as well as 1798part2.org. as well as republicreview.org. The number to call in for today is 215-867-8255. We kind of mix it up a little bit, but today it is 215-TOP-TALK. I don't know if I'm going to have time to get into any of Trump's campaign promises, but I will be, and I'll give you a heads-up warning. I'll give you probably a week's warning when we really get into the militia. And the reason why this is important is because the evidence is overwhelming that the militia was the integral component in national security for the motherland, if you understand what I'm saying. The government had an entity, an organization, and it fell under the executive department called the War Department. And that organization was responsible for external security in going abroad. And actually, Jefferson used the external security forces, which was the Navy and the Marine Corps, to go after the Barbary pirates. There have been, you know, and there is a need. And as a matter of fact, I had a nice long conversation with a patriot last night regarding the constitutionality of us, you know, extending ourselves to literally secure our flow of commerce, because that's exactly why Jefferson went into the Mediterranean, was to literally stop the Nation of Islam from harassing and, you know, basically holding our commerce hostage. And that was kind of like the beginning of people actually standing up to the Ottoman Empire. And it was basically, I think, about a century later, they were pretty much shut down and, let's just say, relegated to far less significance in the world's life and eyes. And so the concept of securing national security externally was actually a very well embraced concept. Now, lots of people like pointing out that Washington wanted, and his policy was, not to have any alliances, long term or what have you, with foreign nations, because, you know, the entanglements that come with those. That was one side of the entanglements, was one side of this issue. The other side of this issue was the fact that when Washington was president, we did not have a really good external security force. In other words, a 911 force like we have with the Marines today. And so we didn't have the ability to project any power. I mean, we were dealing with the Barbary pirates and the Ottoman Empire during Washington's time, but he just did not have the ability to even engage in that. We were still dealing with Britain and did not have a sizable navy, literally, to be able to exert that, or it was just not one of Washington's priorities, getting the government functioning, operating on as many cylinders as they possibly can, and, you know, starting to develop wealth and trade with other nations and so forth. And you got to understand that they didn't have radar or anything else. So, you know, it was literally by happenstance that Britain would be out patrolling and actually catch, you know, one of our ships going by. It's not like they had radar and, you know, imagery from overhead and, you know, reconnaissance. The only reconnaissance was send a ship out. And if you can entangle with a United States ship, then, you know, impress the sailors and take the cargo hostage. And if you look at the ships back then, it's not like they were these big, huge superliners. So the commerce, whatever was taken, wasn't in the magnitude of dollars or cost of lost productivity or what have you, like it could be today with these huge super freighting ships that literally move commerce across the ocean. I'm just trying to give you a really good paradigm because obviously this stuff's going to come up because we're going to talk about some of this stuff. Such as Venezuela and so forth. And so I think it's really, really important that we kind of keep a macro view in history's perspective on why America and why the framers created certain paradigms, policies, and they had very specific views. So we're going to get into that as we move forward. I will do the proverbial quick groveling. If you want to help, you want to support what we're doing in educating people within the party, within the electorate, and so forth, focusing on the dark red states, then by all means, you can support our GoFundMe campaign. You can, you know, do like set up a monthly donation or what have you. Or you can actually just send me an email. I will work with you in what you can do for your county and state, depending on where you live, and or connect you with other people within your county or state. And the other thing is you can actually join up with Ning.com, actually not Ning, constitutionclub.ning.com, which is the efforts that they're trying to pursue right now is the rescission of the 17th Amendment. So anyway, I'm just going to kind of plow forward here. If you want to help, those are three great ways. Info at Reclaiming the Republic, our GoFundMe campaign for Reclaiming the Republic, as well as the Constitution Club on constitutionclub.ning.com. So I did scan the news before we, you know, went on air today. And even though, like I said, there's all sorts of things that are happening, none of them are significant reductions or removals, actually, of literally usurpations of the state's powers, the state's rights, and the tyranny that we are living under. In other words, there is no sign in the news that the federal government is going to disband any of its tyrannical roles, responsibilities, and power. So what does that mean? Every day I tell you this, they're not going to do this on their own. It is just like the bully has been completely empowered, and the states, in some respects, are empowering them. We have to start making fundamental changes, and those fundamental changes are not in D.C. That's exactly what the Democrats and the progressives want you to focus on, because you can't change D.C. They are so steeped in corruption that the only way we can change D.C. is from externally, by using the force of the states, enforcing the federal government. And like I said, if you want to know about those things, contact me, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. But there are mechanisms within the Constitution for the states to be able to exert its authority over the federal government. So one of the things I kind of wanted to do, acknowledging that the federal government is, you know, just lock, stock, and barrel moving us towards this globalist agenda and moving us into deeper socialism towards communism, I wanted to point out with regards to yesterday and the day before, going through the bounties of the cod fisheries where Madison was schooling Mr. Livingston and the rest of Congress on the real dangers of misunderstanding and misapplying, not interpreting. It is clearly delineated and defined that the General Welfare and Defense Clause does not grant any new roles, responsibilities, or powers to the federal government. It is not a portal for the federal government to be able to assume any new role, responsibility, or power. It only applies to the enumerated powers, as Madison clearly stated at that point, and as it was stated during the ratification debates, as well as he stated in 1817 in his formal reply to Congress when they tried to create the Department of Transportation, basically telling Congress that if they want to create a Department of Transportation, by all means, go ahead and submit and first pass and then submit an amendment to the Constitution for the states to delegate that power to the federal government. That is the only way the Department of Transportation can constitutionally function and operate. Madison clearly says in that veto that even if the states allow you to get away with this, it is still a violation of the Constitution. And what he means by that is the day may come when the awakening of the Republic occurs, like today, and the folks go, you know what, we're done with this. There is no way we're going to allow you to do this. I had a pretty interesting conversation, like I said, last night with a patriot that believes that the military has the ability to actually spend money on highways for moving and the movement of military equipment and gear. The military, again, like I kind of started off with, the national military was an external force. Now, they may have to move things and they use rail and so forth, but they don't have the constitutional powers to actually build roadways, because where do they get that money? Well, they're getting that money from you, the taxpayers. And so, as Madison stated, the infrastructure of the states literally belongs to the states, except for post roads. I don't think the paradigm, even maybe it shifted and people kind of made allowance for, I still believe you have to amend the Constitution to be able to tax people in spending the money in those particular ways. We're at a hard break, and I'll be right back after this. Thank you so much. Are you a patriotic proprietor of a business that is looking to get exposure on a fast-growing program? How would you like to get exposure on the only program on the air that provides an actual constitutional solution to all the federal government overreach and encroachments? If you understand the importance of educating the electorate, we would love to work with you in growing your business and revenues while you support the airing of our content on this station. Your support goes to growing the reach of this show and does not pay for elaborate salaries or highfalutin lifestyles. The show is growing fast, and we're also planning on airing the content about Republic Review on a video medium soon. If you'd like to be a part of history and the growth of the most relevant and result-oriented show on the air anywhere in the world, then just email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can lock in exceptional pricing and great advertising opportunities. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. And a part of the dialogue regarding the bounties for cod fisheries is the bigger or the overarching paradigm of compassionate services. There is no doubt the framers had profound understanding of what happens when government begins actually takes over and controls compassionate services. It was pretty well common knowledge that if you wanted to kill people, if you want to do, you know, the exertions of force, there is no better entity than government. government fights wars really well, and they have to be placed into check in managing people, which is the reason why they created such a limited government and a constitutional republic the way it was. State governments, they felt and they understand that state governments are close to the hearts of the people, and that the people, you know, understood the need of keeping a very tight control of their own state government. But what the framers did was they created a, not a national government, but a general government with very limited scope and very limited responsibilities to ensure that it couldn't self-aggrandize itself without violating the Constitution. And that's why it is so easy for me and anybody that understands the Constitution to prove that the federal government is violating the Constitution and operating well outside those boundaries. So, as I say, there's nobody that does any better job in killing people. And if you look at the reality, when people like to point at the evil corporations and how they kill people, that is impaled by the comparison of the government. I mean, literally, that is destroyed. That whole argument is completely folly. It is a red herring. It is a straw man. It is weak. It is the weakest argument out there, because nobody is as efficient as killing, controlling, and enslaving people like government. Venezuela is a good example of that, just in recent times. But if you want to go back to even more recent, where many of you may actually remember Pol Pot in Cambodia and the millions he killed because they had an education and they posed the biggest threat to his regime. Let's not forget history. And we can go back further and further, and throughout the annals of mankind, we can prove that centralized governments are the most brutal things ever created. And that's why the framers didn't create a centralized government. They created a limited and defined general government. And that's why I tell you, it is critical. It is important. Just like reading your scriptures on a daily basis, or, you know, on a regular basis at least, right? We have to read our founding documents. The only reason why it is critical to read the scriptures is why it's critical to read, the New Testament and so forth, and the Gospels, is because that's how we can start recognizing false doctrine. It's the same thing with our government founding documents. The only way you're going to recognize the real fallacies that they have been basically lying and deceiving America with is by reading the ratification debates and these founding documents. The Federalist Papers are good, but I want to be clear here. There's way too many people that cite and stand on the Federalist Papers. I cite them, but I do not cite them alone. I only use them as the little snidbits because they're unofficial correspondences in arguing in the public arena with anti-federalists and so forth through the newspaper. The only real arguments that count regarding how the Constitution is to be defined is the ratification debates. The ratification debates are literally the documents that recorded what was said and how it was said and how it defined the contract and how the states accepted those terms in ratifying that contract. Those are the only things that are literally legally binding, and it is critical that we keep it in that perspective, because I got to tell you, folks, it's a contract. And when it's a violation of the contract, you have to look at the actual legal definitions within that contract. And those are obtained out of the ratification debate. So it's really, really important for people to at least read those. And so it's really important to try to get that kind of message. There's some good books out there, But to me, they tell a story of Madison. They tell a story of, you know, particular framers or what have you. But there is not a really good historical document or book or reference that you can actually take that goes, wow, this, you know, this really puts it all together for you. And so I think there's a demand for that. And I don't know if there's anybody that's going to do it. Maybe I'll have to do it. But bottom line, the people need to have access to the ratification debates, and at least somebody needs to kind of put them into a jumpstart. And that's what I've been trying to do by actually citing ratification debate comments as I went through Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, New York, Carolina, Virginia, and so forth. I don't know if I included Maryland, but I mean, there's some of them are really sparse. But some of them are so meaty, and those definitions, you got to understand that in a compact, the definitions provided within one state. And the fact is that between all of the states, there was harmony amongst how the Constitution was defined by those who were the delegates to the Constitutional Convention, as well as the Federalists. So that's what we have to go on, and that's precisely what Madison said. We have to rely upon how the states understood the compact at the time of ratification. You know, the Federalist Papers are nice, but what the testimony was born in that, because, you know, this was a legal process where these people were literally, you know, swearing testimony and providing debate back and forth. I'm not sure if they were actually sworn in like a court of law, but this was a contractual debate. And so as people provided the information, it didn't really matter. If you agree to do one particular thing in a contract, or that this is supposed to be a certain way in the contract, it's legally binding. It doesn't matter whether you're sworn in or not. You are held to that definition. So let me get back to the shutdown real quick. And I would beseech you, I ask, I beg, I implore, reach out to President Trump through the White House connection page and ask him to shut down the EPA, to force, to call it unconstitutional. The evidence is overwhelming. You can point it to me. You can point to the ratification debates. The evidence is overwhelming that the EPA is a violation of the Constitution. And tell him to write an EO and shut down the EPA and watch the Democrats come running. I am telling you, there is no doubt in my mind that if he did that, the Democrats would give him his wall. They would build his entire wall the way he would want it and more. They'll even put bells on it, and they'll even staff it every 100 feet or what have you. I mean, they will go to whatever lengths they possibly can because they have to protect the communist deep state machine that they have created, because they understand the importance of how the EPA is literally stealing our property and stealing our liberties away from us, as well as these other entities, just like the Education Department. That would be the next one. Send them on the next. Do the Education Department second. Oh, I'm telling you, the Democrats would just lose it. The communists that they are would lose it because they understand what the education system is doing. You need to listen to my podcast for December, where I went a week or two talking about how the education system is literally indoctrinating these kids, not only to just vote for progressive ideas, but these kids are learning to hate their. If you are a Christian parent and you are trying to espouse good quality Christian values as you're fighting the doctrine and dogma that's coming into your kids' minds from the school system, that school system is programming your kids to hate you, because how dare you believe in that dogma that is going to take away their opportunity to have a good time? Because that's what they believe. They believe that they have an entitlement to a good time. And these kids at the very young age are being taught very perverse things so that they are supposed to, by age 10, self-identify. Before puberty, they're supposed to self-identify their sexual orientation. Are you kidding me? the education system is evil. And as much as I would love to see it get dismantled, I don't know if President Trump has the intestinal fortitude to do what is right, to really make America, put it on the path of making it great again. Is he enough of a leader to go out to the states and to literally poke the states in the eye and say, you're the ones that have been allowing this to happen. You are the ones that are letting this federal government run rickshaw over you. It is your responsibility to keep us in check, and you have been failing the American people. And I, as the president, want to make America great again. I can't do it without you. How about stepping up? Like in Wyoming, how about cowboying up? How about, you know, rising to the role and responsibility you're supposed to be serving in protecting your citizens from federal tyranny? It's pretty simple, folks. But anyway, I guess I went off on a tangent, or I should say a rant. We will be right back. I'll try to close that rant and move forward on some of these things I think you're really going to be interested in. So we'll be right back after this. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TALK-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
So if Trump really wants to, you know, take it to the deep state, if he really wants to drain the swamp, make America great again, then I'm here to tell you that his best path in doing that would be dismantling many of these unconstitutional roles, responsibilities, and getting the ball started. That way the states can step in and actually finish the job. In my conversation last night, I didn't get a chance to tell this good, great patriot that we could actually work directly to Donald Trump and get him to get this ball rolling in starting Republic Review. I mean, how great would that be? Actually having a coordination, actually having cooperation at the executive level in helping and actually aiding and assisting the states in dismantling this unconstitutional Leviathan. How great would that be? He's got 2 years to do this, and the obstructionist Democrats, I would love to just see a lot of them, you know, get hauled off into emergency rooms with massive coronaries and what have you. And in some cases, if, you know, if some of them are so far gone as well, I mean, then they may actually be replaced by, you know, their California constituents or whoever sent them. How great would that be? Let me ask you this, though. What is it going to take to get you involved? Let's try this. Let's try you. And actually, I'm going to put up a webpage. Tomorrow, I'm going to have this done because I want you to just provide the link to Reclaiming the Republic. I will have the extracts for you. I will have all the citations for you. All you need to do is send Trump a message to the White House asking him to stand down the EPA. And if he needs any evidence, he can find all the citations necessary on the particular page, and I will give it to you. And how about that? Then it's not just one person. It's not just GR literally pinging the White House saying, why aren't you doing this? It could be an overwhelming message, just like this petition in holding this representative accountable for the crime she committed prior to becoming a representative. Representatives and politicians can no longer be above the law. Obviously, the Democrats are trying, and they've made 2 years attempt in trying to hold Trump accountable for Russian collusion, and that line and that whole position has been a moving one. So what's it going to take for you to getting involved? I'm telling you, the globalists, the tech companies, the communists around the world that America has been subsidizing does not want to see America stop subsidizing all of their great communism. So with that, let's just jump into a great story that actually hit the news. China, if you hadn't heard, is now blocking Microsoft Bing's search engine. Now, this isn't because Microsoft is doing anything dubious. As a matter of fact, Microsoft has bent like a reed or a willow in the wind to China's demands in censoring their citizens in being able to have access to the truth and real data. And so what China has done is they believe that because they didn't have any accessibility on Wednesday to literally, you know, check their censorship models and whether they're being complied to or not, they literally shut down Microsoft. That is a tyrannical government that is literally oppressing their people. And it's almost like the Catholic Church. Remember what Martin Luther did when he put his grievances on the door? I'm telling you, this is what's going on in China. This is what's going on in these communist countries. People are being kept in the dark. They're being fed propaganda. And it's almost the same thing here. Because the propaganda machine, which we call the mainstream media, is literally just pumping us a bunch of crap. So why is it, though? Here's the real underlying reason or question I have, is why is it that American tech companies are allowing communist governments these types of controls, like Google, Amazon, Microsoft? They're all in this. And why? It's because they believe that they should be in control of you. So my question is, and you've probably heard it before, I don't know, this may be the first time I've said this. What is it going to take to get you to actually start taking actions? These things don't take much time. Sending a little note to the White House doesn't take much time. I promise you, it can be done rather quickly. And you can do it within a minute or two, and then you can still get your football game on or whatever you use for helping numb yourself from the reality of society. Maybe it's a good stiff drink. I don't know. I'm beyond that. There's nothing that can numb me anymore. I'm literally at a point where I, just like my father, he had a sign above the bed that says, today I will operate at 212 degrees Fahrenheit. And what that meant was, because the body is primarily water, that means that he was going to operate at water's maximum potential, because at 212 degrees is water's maximum potential. Okay, so let me try to hit this up with you. If you haven't heard, I mean, here's another great way how government can kill people. New York Cuomo had just passed, I mean, Governor Cuomo of New York has just passed a very controversial new abortion law, and it's allowing late-term abortions, and literally it's like the virtual abortions on demand up until the last minute. I don't know if it covers if a woman is in, you know, labor, can she abort her child? I don't know, but we are getting very close to a point of infanticide where, you know, in the olden days where they didn't have the medical technology and advancements that we have today, they actually allowed the parents to kill their children after that was infanticide. I'm sorry, not infanticide, infanticide. And so societies actually embraced that. These were brutal, corrupt, and immoral or amoral societies that allowed those types of things to happen. And that's what's happened to us. Our education system has decayed our morals to a point where we are now living in these types of states and conditions. This is pathetic. This is pathetic. And I know, as George Mason stated during the Constitutional Convention, God cannot punish nations and states in heaven, so he will punish these nations and these states here for this abomination that is moving forward. Basically, predicting and promising that we would have a civil war, and that was over slavery. I'm telling you that the government and all of these people being doing this will be held accountable for these abominable things that they're doing. And so I know you probably heard about this, but simply put, this new act will allow the termination of a fully formed baby. And why are they doing this? Why is it that the communists are embracing? I mean, they're thinking this is the greatest thing. They're doing high fives. They're doing, you know, end zone dances and everything. Why? The ends justify the means. If you actually have a population control, then we are moving ourselves rapidly towards, you know, the ideal utopian communism of the statist government. And it's all about control. The ends justify the means. Here's an interesting story. And I know I really feel for the little boy. Ibn Polk, who fell asleep on a bus. I think he was in Delaware. And apparently there was a lot of things that just went wrong. But there's nobody asking some other questions. I really feel sorry for the bus driver, because you get used to a routine and you forget or you no longer follow specific routines. So here's some things that I'm just going to throw out, because the bus driver got fired. And the question I have is, they have cameras on these buses. How come the cameras aren't being used to verify whether the bus drivers are actually doing a full sweep scan of the bus and actually holding the bus driver accountable and docking their pay? Instead, they wait for a tragic incident like this to occur. Tragic. I mean, the boy's okay. He was traumatized, apparently, by the folks. And I'll get into that in a second. But they already have the measurements or the ability to have measurements of determining whether bus drivers are following all the procedures and processes. Why is it that they're not doing that and saying, hey, we're going to dock your pay because you didn't do a check this day? And literally holding, because they've got all this video. Oh, it would take somebody to actually manage and watch that. Well, what do supervisors do? What is it that leaders are supposed to do? Leaders are supposed to make sure that the job is getting done. Well, maybe they need to have software, but how long does it take to just do a fast forward? You didn't scan through the bus. You didn't do the walkthrough. I'm sorry. We're going to have to hit you, and it's going to dock your pay. Get people to do their job, regardless of whether it is one of those things That, you know, you know, it may be routine, it may seem needless, but it is an important routine because you never know when a little boy or girl might be stuck on the bus for a long period of time, especially the little kids. So there was a complete breakdown in processes, and there was a few other problems, and I'm going to get to that in just a minute when we come back after this hard break, because as I've suppressed it, like a good government, you couldn't hear the music. But the music has been going, and we're going to go into hard break, so please stay tuned. And we're going to talk about Abdul Polk, or Russell Polk, whoever he is, when we come back. I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. So, obviously, they've got the technology. They've got these things in place with monitoring and everything else to just, and they keep it to only, they record it and keep it only for the purposes of covering their butts. And so now they're having to cover their butts. But why don't they use this to actually, you know, ensure that specific processes are followed? I don't understand this. It doesn't make sense why a company wouldn't have at least, you know, you don't know what day during the week they're going to check to see if you do it. And, you know, they just do random checks instead of doing it every day. But doggone it, you know, have policies and processes in place to ensure that policies and processes are followed. That's all. I mean, this could have been avoided completely had they done that. But here's some questions I have. Here is a young boy that is just, you know, woke up, got fed, and supposedly got on the bus to go to school, and yet falls asleep on the bus on his way to school. Now, this may be because this young man might be narcoleptic. Who knows? He just may be prone to falling asleep. Don't know. But there should be a look into this because, you know, it's not very common that once a little young one, you know, wakes up that they just literally fall right back asleep, especially with the way people feed them with sugars and carbohydrates. They bounce off the ceiling for quite a while until it's nap time, and still getting them to nap at that age, you know, but you do have a child that might have that type of problem. So is there anything that is looking into, you know, the health of this child to determine whether we need to be aware of maybe a certain condition that this child may have? Or maybe it may not be a child condition, but it may be an environmental condition where the child isn't getting good sleep at night. Who knows? But I think maybe the school and the community should probably look into, if it's not a health thing going on, why did this child fall asleep? I think there's merit in ensuring that these things are, you know, there's not a problem there in the home either. The other thing is, because we are such a litigious country, that there's no doubt, I've already heard the cha-ching when obviously the father, who they, in one article they refer to him as Russell Polk, and in another article they refer to him as Abdul Polk. And so in the Russell Polk article, the father says his son has been traumatized. Well, what does that mean? Oh, well, you know, that means that he's setting a stage for actually suing and looking at becoming an opportunist at the expense of the taxpayers. Because, I mean, bottom line, the school district pays the bus company. The bus company, you know, may have some insurance, but nevertheless, in the old days, that would not have happened. It's because lawyers love, you know, trying to pursue issues in literally getting rich quick type of schemes. And I have a problem with that. I'm sure most Americans look at that and they go, it's wrong. Unfortunately, though, when every American that says it's wrong is presented with the opportunity to actually sue, then they will take it to that person. Oh, they're going to pay. But you can definitely hear that and what's going on. But I truly believe that, you know, you have to do the due diligence in finding out where all of these problems lie. Because I don't believe, and people may, you know, overwhelm me with protests and so forth, but I just don't believe it's very common for young kids to be woken up and then maybe fall asleep unless they are not getting good sleep. Were those conversations had? They need to do the due diligence, because this may be, you know, something that's actually a bigger problem in the background that nobody is addressing or aware of. I'm not going to belabor the point, but I just think it's interesting, right? Back to Venezuela. U.S. warns China. So I'm setting the stage here. U.S. warns China and Russia about issuing new debt for Venezuela. The National Electoral Council of Venezuela certified Maduro's, his re-election with 68% of the vote. The election took place amid a financial crisis in Venezuela, whose economy has been hit by the falling oil prices. So Venezuela has also experienced mass protests over the past year, and they're not happy. So you have to scratch your head and go, why is it that the people aren't voting for change? It is always a revolution when the people are affected so financially that they actually vote the bums out and they get new people in. So how is it that Maduro was reelected? I mean, any person with any type of common sense, logic, and reason will literally work their way to going, this was a rigged election, and Maduro is literally oppressing and suppressing his folks. In response to U.S.'s, you know, basically telling China and Russia, don't be issuing any more debt to them, China, Turkey, Syria, along with Russia, has sent their warnings to the United States against the intervention in Venezuela by recognizing the opposition leader. Now, let's understand where everything lies, because I said this before. Might I remind you of the Monroe Doctrine? It is in America's backyard. We have precedence and we have a responsibility in making sure that Russia, China, any other nation is not, you know, dabbling and messing around with nations that are in the Western Hemisphere. I think, if I remember correctly, Monroe is actually a framer. Monroe actually created a doctrine that doesn't bode well with some people's arguments on not non-aligning interest, or, you know, we're a passive country like the Pauls and so forth, the libertarian perspective. You know, when somebody states, oh, you know, America is really a passive country. No. No, we really actually do take the high moral high ground. That's what I meant, moral high ground, in trying to make sure that the nefarious countries that have been living in entanglements century after century after century do not try to ensnare these countries here. You got to remember that it was shortly after the Monroe Doctrine where Spain, Portugal, Britain, and France literally lost their strangleholds over these countries, and these countries became free and independent states. Mexico was a recipient of the Monroe Doctrine of becoming a free and independent state. If you start understanding the magnitude of this, we do have a responsibility to ensure that these other states are not supporting this type of a tyrant. And so I don't know where you come in on this. I do not believe that America should sit idly by and watch people suffer like this. I truly believe communism makes people suffer. I believe the domino argument was absolutely correct, that when one nation falls, that cancer, that insidious growth of communism infiltrates the neighboring states. That happened in Asia. Look at what happened in Asia. And it's literally, you know, once you get that cancer to take over, then all of a sudden, you know, it becomes very hard to remove that cancer once it's taken a deep hold. And I, you know, even though there were other nefarious things behind America's meddling in Vietnam and other places, I still believe that we should have taken the moral high ground. I believe that as a collection of independent and free states that the United States are, we should be actually pursuing and supporting individual liberty and individual sovereignty everywhere, and actually poking communist states in the eye for their humanitarian crises that they constantly are imposing upon their people. And so it just goes without saying that how important these types of things are. I know that there's been a lot of other distractions, such as the Nathan Phillips issue, you know, actually injecting himself into the activist. Here's a guy that is really, he's just looking for relevance in his life. That's all he's doing. And, you know, he may not have much more life left. I mean, as you get older, you realize, I've only got a few more years. He's looking maybe for his 15 minutes of fame. I don't know. But I do know this, that when his organization that was in D.C. for a protest, as well as these kids who I think they were from Kentucky, the Covington School or what have you, those details just don't matter. What really matters is that here's Phillips seeing these other protests, and now he has an opportunity to access our national distraction network by trying to commingle in the natural commingling of two protests in the same area and be able to try to penetrate that and try to make hay out of that, because obviously he knew that these were conservatives, because what were they there protesting? I believe they were there protesting abortion. And so, there's no doubt in my mind, he's just an opportunist. And the news media is making him, everybody has tried to make him the week or the month's, hero for confronting the evil capitalist. Don't let them distract you on these types of things. And as a matter of fact, let me go one step further. We have to stop protesting in D.C. Start protesting in your state capital. And as a matter of fact, this is so important. We're going to lead with this tomorrow. So God bless. I'm G.R. Mobley. I'm Reclaiming the Republic. And we need your help. What's it going to take? Only you can answer that. God bless. We'll be back tomorrow. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic. I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.